Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
On Heritage Radio Network. We are Groundworks, Inc. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City, even in December. Actually, we're not doing it right now, but no. Our gardeners are.
We're winding down.
Out in the cold today. So today we have a really great guest from the other coast, the coast of Washington, Bruce Bailey, who's the owner of Heavy Petal Nursery and a self-professed plantaholic. Here's what Linda Butler, author and curator of the Rogers and Clematis Collection, says about Bruce. Bruce Bailey does not let living in Zone 5 define his gardening or his life. His adventurous style is evident in every plant he selects and in each garden he designs. When I met Bruce, my first impression was one of boundless energy and a mind always at work. His careful observation of nature and nature, as expressed in gardens, informs his plant choices. And once formed, his opinions are not hidden. Bruce's educational background is in art history and design, and he is an accomplished interior designer, decorator, in addition to his ability to paint pictures with plants. Even plants for sale at his nursery are presented to the shopper in a painterly style. And actually, Alice and I had been following Bruce's musings about plants on Facebook. And after we became virtually acquainted, we asked him to be a guest because of his interest in kind of pushing the envelope with plants and gardens. And we like people who like to do that. So, Bruce, I'm so glad you could join us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
So, that was an interesting bio, but I don't think it goes into depth enough
right.
for me. I think you need to tell us more about how you ended up designing and building gardens. You've had quite an evolution. Why don't you share a little bit about that?
Well, my background in college was in art and art history, and actually I minored in history as well. I'd always been kind of a gardener through high school. I worked in a nursery in high school. My grandfather was a gardener. And after college, I went to work for a Federated Department Stores. At that time, it was the Bon Marché here in Washington State. Later became Macy's. After a few years, I was kind of fed up with kind of the in-store politics that happened.
Right.
A lot behind the scenes.
That's always fun, isn't it?
Yeah. And I just decided from then I needed to kind of take a break. And so I came to work for my family's business.
What did they do?
Well, my dad had a construction excavation business at the time, and he was also building a ranch.
Awesome.
He raises, he's down to 70 horses, we'll just put it that way.
Wow. What kind of horses were they?
American Quarter horses.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got, he has a breeding program, he has 5 stallions here on the ranch. But from there, I kind of... There was a calling somewhere. I wasn't satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a year off and decided to spend time in my own garden. And I was kind of pestering the manager of a local garden center a little bit. And I was asking for plants. And she's like, I don't know what those are. I can't get those. Those aren't on my list.
Uh-huh. Well,
not on my list. I love that line.
She's asking me to come work for her.
Uh-huh.
So I did.
Good.
And I worked in a local garden center for about 4 years, became the assistant manager.
That's a really good way to actually learn plant ID and plant names is to actually work with them every day. It's so much more tangible, isn't it, Bruce, than reading about them and looking at little photos,
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, and that was part of the problem, is I was a little bit more versed in plants than she was.
I was going to say, you were teaching her.
Actually, yeah. She actually, her garden kind of expanded in the 4 years also.
Right.
And she's a big lover of the Plain States plants, the grasses, the Rudbeckias, and the first thing I showed her was Rudbeckia herbstone.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh my gosh, it's 6 feet tall. I'm like, yeah, isn't it great? She had to buy the whole flat herself. So of course, she started kind of delving into plants, but I also became the gift buyer for the store, and the store opened up a gift department as well. And I picked up a few design clients. That kind of progressed into more design clients, went to work for a company over on the west side of the state, because I'm more in central Washington, out in the high desert.
Okay.
And went to work for this company that was dealing a lot with Microsoft clients.
Mm-hmm.
This was pre-9/11. And I started bringing plants home. Well, I was bringing plants home that I could use, bringing plants home that I wanted. Yeah, I killed a lot of plants along the way because I had to have the plant, whether I could grow it or not.
Right.
I had to have it.
I know that obsession.
Yeah. So then I started growing a few plants and making a few cuttings and growing a few more plants. And for the first 2 years, I kind of had a little pocket nursery behind one of my dad's shop buildings that I was keeping for myself. And next thing you know, I decided I'd buy a 3,000 square foot greenhouse because several of my friends are like, oh, you get a greenhouse, you'll fill it. And I'm like, I got to get the biggest greenhouse I can get for the dollar.
Yeah, right.
So that's what I did, and it was kind of a snowball effect after that. It just, the nursery grew out of that, and I of course, left the garden center, and I had design clients, I have container clients, both commercial and private.
How did you come up with the name Heavy Petals?
Yeah.
That's such an awesome
name. Well, I used to be Inside Out, and there was a gal who kind of took my name and applied it to her business here.
Oh.
And not thinking about it. She didn't even think about it because she became something Inside and Out. So a lot of people thought we went into business together. And I'm like, I got to break away.
Yeah.
I just have to break away from this. And I have a very different aesthetic. It's a little bit rock and roll. It's a little bit steampunk.
Yeah.
It's a little bit big top at times.
Big top.
So I'm just like, and one of my friends like, yeah, you ought to just, you ought to be rock and roll. You ought to be heavy metal nursery. I'm like, no, I don't want to be heavy metal.
Right. No, but I know what you're saying. Right.
Yeah, it's a good way to stand out.
But let's put a twist on this whole thing. Let's become Heavy Petal. I got a lot of flowers.
Yeah, right. It's a great name.
She thought that was brilliant.
It was. It's a great name. Totally memorable.
Well, and then last year, I stumbled upon, I'm trying to think of Andrea's last name, but she's out of the Vancouver area of British Columbia. Well, she's also Heavy Petal.
Right.
And she has a Heavy Petal blog. So she and I have kind of, through Twitter and through Facebook, we've agreed it's a West Coast mentality.
I don't know. There's a lot of punk rocker heavy metal heads in New York, too.
And Punk Rock Gardens, she's right. What, in Harrisburg, PA.
Yeah,
that's
so,
right. Is that Debbie?
And Laura's a really great guy.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
also
right.
a friend of mine. And yeah. Michael Nolan, the garden rock star, is also a friend of mine.
Right.
And, well, you know what? I think this business could use an injection of rock and roll. It's very, if anyone has been to a trade show, God, we need it. We need like.
Well, and I totally agree with you. This year, I decided to go off to the IGC in Chicago. I had never been.
Uh-huh.
But I've been to the Far West show in Portland several times, and frankly, I'm jaded.
Yeah.
I am jaded because the Northwest is so full of great plant breeders, and it seems like they're really presenting the product, and the Willamette Valley just has so many great growers, and so they also do up in Washington State. but I wanted to see some new stuff.
Yeah, so. No, it's good. Carmen and I came out to the San Francisco show several years ago, and it was just completely inspirational. And
different from what happens on the East Coast.
You really should come out to the Seattle show. It's the second largest show in America.
I know. That's been on our
when
radar.
When is it? Is it in March?
No, that's in February.
February. Yeah. And what was really interesting when we were in San Francisco several years ago was everybody was so interested in English gardens from the East Coast. And we were like, blah, blah, blah. Like,
we've already done that. Like,
give us some interesting plants and some Japanese aesthetic, you know?
Well, I noticed several years ago I was fortunate enough to meet Christopher Lloyd.
Uh-huh.
And he had come out to speak in the Northwest. And he was more interested to go see the plants here in the Northwest.
Right.
While everybody, you know, from here is focusing on England, the people in England are focusing on here.
I know. That's what I was trying to say. It's like
so
always opposite.
There's this plant envy going on.
Yeah.
It's plant envy. That's all it is.
Yeah. Yep, it sure is. I'm sure there's a song about that, too.
If there isn't, there should be.
Yeah. Well, we get a lot of, as landscape designers, a lot of wonderful plants come from the West Coast and end up in East Coast gardens.
Thanks to Dan Hinckley.
Yeah, and also just, great soil for growing. And so we have this impression of Washington State as being really wet and warm, but so much of it is not. Tell us about where you garden and grow and how different it is.
Well, I'm at about 1,300 foot elevation. Mm-hmm. I am in a high desert.
Right.
Sagebrush is kind of the native here.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Basalt formations, gorgeous chasm of the Columbia River that it flows through.
I'm dying to see that.
Well, and a lot of people, sit there, Washington, you got such beautiful trees. Well, we're lucky to get a tree grow sometimes.
Right.
In my part. And I'm kind of more in the middle where even more easterly in Washington towards Spokane, you start getting into the foothills in the pines again.
Right.
So we kind of go through everything, but I'm in an area where winter can be a drought.
Wow.
Our snow is what they would consider dry, and it actually evaporates because of the winds.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you're in a unique environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much rain do you get typically per year? What's your average?
Ooh, I wouldn't even say we get 12 inches.
That's crazy. New York gets on average 47 inches of rain a year. This year we had a lot more than that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's very different from Seattle.
Yeah. Well, and then Seattle also has its dry time too, but that's usually in July and August when all the lawns turn this pretty gold color.
Right. So, a question then. Your addiction to plants, did it come from, like, your design needs? Things that you wanted to see and use as in your designs? Or was it just an obsession to grow things, or both?
Well, it was a catalyst for the nursery. We'll just put it that way. I think once you kind of start getting into, I like that plant. Oh, that plant looks cool. Oh, there's a different version of that plant.
Right.
Oh, there's something else. Oh, somebody came out with something newer.
That's
somebody's
the slippery
read something
slope.
Cooler.
Yeah.
It kind of goes along that, and you have to have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's better than a drug addiction, frankly.
Well, it's safer.
It's safer.
And half the time, it's more rewarding.
Yeah. Well,
the shoes are seasonal.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're not going to wear them next year anyway.
Right.
True.
Do you know Dennis Schrader?
I know. I have met Dennis. I met him several years ago. He had come out here with a horticultural symposium.
Uh-huh.
And he was speaking with Thomas Hobbs, Tom Fisher,
uh-huh.
and Fergus Garrett on that symposium. And he's kind of a shy guy, but he has a great, great garden. And talk about somebody who loves tropicals.
Yeah. Well, that's when you were talking about kind of the need for both design reasons, for starting your nursery and just the desire to grow things. That's how Dennis's nursery got started, Landcraft. And it's a similar story. He was a landscaper who just was like, why can't I get what I want? You know, he saw the niche and that was missing in the market. And it sounds like you kind of had a similar experience.
Well, yeah.
And talk about horticultural envy, Bruce. Well, I mean, every time we go to his nursery to buy plant material, we end up in the house that has his personal collection, and we're like, can we buy that? He's like, well, no, that's mine. And like, well, can we buy that? And he's like, no, that's not for
sale. I just brought that from Costa Rica.
I hate to tell you, but many of us are kind of like that. I know Sean Hogan of Sistis has his little kind of stashes. I know Dan Hinckley has his stashes. We all kind of do it.
Right.
You know, they're our collection. And a lot of times we've gotten them as gifts from people who have found them, created them, propagated them,
right,
whatever. So it's kind of a personal thing.
But it's such a great community when you meet someone to share it with and who's got a similar love and a similar aesthetic. And that's what's great, I think, about the gardening community.
Well, and that's what I, several years ago, I was looking at. We don't have a garden club where I live. I'm in a town of 19,000 people.
You are the garden club.
Well, actually, we had a strong garden club, and most of them have passed on.
Yeah.
Or the younger ones became master gardeners and had no real interest in being gardenee.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I went out exploring, and I went, and I looked at a couple organizations in Seattle, and I looked at an organization, you know, in a different town. And basically, I ended up joining the Hardy Plant Society of Oregon because I felt I found my tribe.
Uh-huh. It's nice when you do, right?
And I think gardening, in a way, is kind of tribal.
Yeah.
Because I've even discovered this on our social media. There's certain groups of us who really bound together because we find the same ideas and maybe even sometimes the lack of things, and we want to find that piece that's missing.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's part of the big puzzle, but it's I think you're correct. It's such a sharing community. I mean, I'm also a foodie. A lot of gardeners I know are foodies.
Yeah, it's kind of part and parcel, right?
Yeah, I think it all plays hand in hand, and really finding, you know, the tribe you belong with, and finding people who are in the same groove you are is really necessary to even help you grow as a gardener.
Exactly. So when we have to take a break. Okay. When we come back, though, we want you to think maybe over the break for a second about how far your plant addiction has taken you, and how far would you go to acquire a plant that you desire.
Mm.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
To We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants. Bruce, we picked this song just for you.
A little cactus from Surfer Rosa, the Pixies.
We're here with Bruce Bailey, garden designer and owner of Heavy Petal Nursery in Moses Lake, Washington. And we gave Bruce a challenge. What would you do and how far would you go to get a plant you want?
That's still even a good question. I wouldn't do anything illegal or wouldn't prostitute myself, that's for sure.
You wouldn't take off your dress and send it to me?
Well, I know for a fact that I've paid, we'll say, over $50 for a 3.5-inch pot before.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just on chance that I could grow it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of gardeners, I hate to say it, but sometimes money really isn't the issue.
No, it's the obsession.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I have watched people trade books, trade services, trade anything to get plants.
Services, like I said, in quotations. Just kidding.
What would you barter?
That's a good question.
Okay, we're not going to make me blush today, okay?
I think you are, Bruce.
Alice and I are famous for our not G-rated gardening show.
We'll compete against the hortosexuals in L.A.
Okay, great. Great. So tell us one special story of a plant that you obsessed over and...
Oh, God, you're making me pick one.
Well, we don't have much time, so we just can do one for today.
We'll just put it this way. I went to England a few years ago, got the plant I wanted, which I couldn't find in the United States, carried it around England for 3 weeks just to take a cutting off of it and bring back the cutting.
Yeah. What plant was it?
At that time, it was actually Sambucus black lace. It wasn't available in the United States.
Right. Now it's very common.
Yeah.
Well, I know. Yeah,
it's a beast here. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's and actually, when I'm designing, I don't use it as much. I find that I'm using Black Beauty. Black Beauty is
new. That's a great plant. Well, Alice and I, for a client, when we were out on the West Coast, we saw some Banksias, which are hard to find here. Right. And, you know, we carried it on the plane on our
it was on Carmen's lap during the entire flight from San Francisco back.
We only do that for really special clients.
Well, luckily you're in New York. You have clients that can be a little bit more generous.
Yes, right.
Yeah,
right. So your nursery really specializes in zone 5A to 7, is that right?
Yeah, well, I'm a good hardy zone 5 here.
Okay.
And all zone, you know, I do grow zone things that go down to zone 3, but I have to really look at, I don't want to sell somebody something that they're going to sit there and go, "Oh, it died."
Right, right. No.
I do carry some select things for a little bit higher zones, but I also have people that drift in from Seattle. I have people that drift up from Portland. So I do have some collectors who come, and it's, I need to offer things. I also need to experiment here. I find that I can find those little micro zones, those little pockets around the house,
mm-hmm.
someplace safer that are a little warmer during the winter because they receive the sunshine, but they're up maybe closer to the foundation of the house, and they can really grow something special that they've been wanting.
Yeah.
I hate telling people, sorry, no, you can't do that.
Right, right.
Okay. And it really frustrates me when I walk in someplace and it's like, oh, no, you can't grow that. I hate being told that myself. You can't grow that.
Right. Well, it's got to be tried and true, tested, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Alice and I have planted southern magnolias, in Brooklyn. Technically, they're not hardy here. You know, 6 years later, they're
beautiful and blooming.
Yeah, I mean, we did take a chance. The client was willing to take a chance.
Yeah.
We wrap them, you know, we spray anti-desiccant.
You can't be literal about it. I mean, the tag is a guideline. I mean, if you think about what a zone covers, that's a huge amount of area.
Exactly. And even within those areas, it's not going to cover it completely.
Exactly. And, like, you know, there's always the exception to the rule, thankfully.
Yeah. And it's just finding those zonal denial areas. We'll just call it that.
Zonal denial. I like that word. Yeah. I like that zonal. You're in zonal denial.
That's great.
Well, it's not my phrase, but it's out there. But that's what you're doing. I mean, that's what we all do. We have to. It's like trying to plant orchids in the alpine area. Well, there are orchids that actually grow in alpine areas.
Yeah.
You just have to find the right one.
Exactly.
Are you finding that your customers are getting more sophisticated, Bruce, with their plant palette and, I mean, design clients, not just the nursery people, the collectors that come looking for special things? Are you finding that they're wanting more and more things?
Well, I think the gardening market is becoming more educated. As a whole, okay.
Sure.
Let's start there. I don't like when we see pictures in, let's say, a local newspaper, because I live in a smaller town, and it's showing, oh, these bright yellow, sunny looking daffodils. Well, what type of daffodil is that?
Right.
I'm gonna ask the question.
Right.
And I think people, because of all the magazines, because of the internet, look at all the people we know off of Facebook, Twitter, who are just kind of cruising around, and all of a sudden, oh, you're a garden designer. Hey, friend me. Oh, I want to follow you.
Right.
And they kind of want to know what you're talking about.
Right.
It's because they're seeking knowledge.
Right.
And people want more tidbits of knowledge now. Very few, you know, fewer and fewer people are buying gardening magazines and, like, going through them, you know, page by page. And, you know, they just want to kind of, you know, they're starved for time and they want, like, a quick, you know, inspiration or a quick list of what's going to work for them, you know. And a picture's 1,000 words. I mean, it's just the visual vocabulary. That's what they want to see.
Yeah.
You know.
Tell us, in your kind of West Coast sensibility, what you see that's like an old-fashioned plant that's coming back into vogue.
Well, I know that roses, especially antiques, garden roses, mm-hmm. are coming back into vogue. I believe even Monticello with P. Allen Smith, they're kind of working together. I'm not quite sure about it. It's just something I've read about the Noisettes, which were the first red roses being brought to America.
Right, out of Charleston, and, South Carolina, right.
Yeah, so we're seeing that. The Biltmore, I noticed this year, is having their own rose collection, and I think Paul Zimmerman works for Biltmore, and there's a gentleman who I think has 1,400 varieties of antique species, old garden roses himself.
Right.
Where is that, Bruce?
The Biltmore?
At the Biltmore it is.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So they're going to start...
Well, no, that's his private collection.
Oh, okay.
He works for the Biltmore. But the Biltmore is doing a lot of restorative work with the rose gardens. They have new roses, and I think they have some of the original roses that the Vanderbilts grew themselves. And I think people are out there, you know, we've had some severe winters on this coast. Mm-hmm. And like in my area, a lot of the grafted roses died. Just, they died all the way down to the rootstock.
Sure.
Well, I'm looking at raising a rose from a cutting, so it's on its own root.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of small nurseries I'm seeing starting to do that. And Weeks and Jackson Perkins and stuff, you know, they're kind of waning.
I know.
I think Jackson and Perkins last year, I didn't see them in a lot of garden centers. I think they were down to purely mail order.
Right.
I think it's something that's happening. We're seeing a lot of nurseries kind of fall under. Big nurseries.
I know. Let's talk a little bit about that movement. Do you think we're going to go, do you think our business is going to kind of, the nursery and horticulture business is going to kind of follow the model of the locavore food movement and go into more?
Well, I think it's going to return to what its roots are.
That would be great.
Nurseries originally were, you know, they were bringing and they were propagating, they were, you know, doing all this themselves. And the bigger production nurseries made it easier to where nurseries, a lot of nurseries became garden centers.
Right.
Well, those big production nurseries have become so big that they've become a little shaky. And we've watched ones go out of business, resurrect themselves, get bought up. And I think it's that mom and pop, which a lot of us own, you know, basically a small individually owned nursery. You're going to see that really starting to take, to blossom.
Right.
We'll just put it that way.
Right. So maybe the business will be in the hands of horticultural craftsmen instead of just, you know, people looking
executive.
At the bottom line. Yeah.
Corporate,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there is a place, you know, impatience perhaps should be grown on a mass scale by, you know, but there's a lot of wonderful plants that, you know, when you have so much overhead, you're not going to take a chance and grow.
No. I've watched a friend of mine who's a grower, and she grows primarily annuals.
Uh-huh.
And I'm watching her buy just plug product,
mm-hmm.
cutting.
Yeah.
And we're talking almost $100,000 worth of plug product and cutting.
Up front, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm sitting there just, you know, that makes me go,
yeah.
Because that's a lot of money
yeah.
to put out, hoping that you're going to have people there, and she's selling it wholesale
uh-huh.
to retailers.
Right.
So that gets to me. That's very scary.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some wholesale grower friends, too, out here in Long Island, and it's the same situation
big,
out here as
big
well.
Big money.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what's up your sleeve for next season, Bruce. What are you excited about growing and selling?
Well, I've been combing through a lot of things. I'm constantly looking for new shrubs. This is probably, for me, an off year. I've got some issues dealing in my personal life. So I don't seem to be focusing as hard as I should, but I am finding a few other things. I'm looking at actually expanding my palette of perennials at the nursery.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people who have, in my area, who've bought new, smaller track homes.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
And so, of course, I'm going to bring in probably more dwarf conifers.
Uh-huh.
I love those.
Yeah.
And we use them a lot in containers in the city.
Well, yeah. But I think more people are using them in containers. And with these small, I mean, I don't know what some of the track homes look like in your area, but when I'm looking at houses that are, you know, spaced almost 10 feet apart, the yards are small. Everything's small. Why
right.
would you plant a tree that's going to get 50 to 70 feet tall?
Yeah, you need the scale.
Yeah, why would you? Landscapers.
right. So, you know, I'm trying to educate people a little bit more about putting things in scale.
Mm-hmm.
Design.
More perennials, more uh-huh. things that are a little bit more carefree. That's one of the reasons I went to IGC, is to really look at some of the availability out there, especially when there's so many Midwest and East Coast growers at that show.
Right.
And it's plants I'm not finding here.
Yeah, what were you really excited about
from
the East Coast or from the Midwest?
Well, of course, I was seeing Spring Meadows and Proven Winners. Of course, I've gotten their catalogs for years, and I've bought from them for years.
Right.
I do see some great perennials coming out of them, coming out of Walter's Gardens. But I also see great perennials coming out of North Creek Nursery.
Oh, I love North Creek. Yeah. They're great.
You know, and I think we as Americans need to also look. Let's face it. You know, a lot of people who have gardens or land, we'll just say landscape around their new houses, want to do the minimum maintenance.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
let's look at things that are native and are going to do well in their area.
Yeah. Yeah.
And. You know, then I'm kind of showing some of these young women how they can sit there and let's just create pocket beds around your patio because that's where you're going to really enjoy them for
right.
the moment. And let them grow from those pocket beds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Start
so,
small.
So,
right.
so put their color, do their containers. Let's do that. But let's leave everything as things, you know, great shrubs with colorful leaves like Cotinus, Sambucus, the physocarpus, you know, or some of these great, I do really well with a lot of different hydrangeas, but I do well with the paniculatus.
Oh, yeah. We love those. Yeah.
And the arborescens. My macrophyllas don't do well in my area.
Yeah.
Not right. enough water.
Yeah. Well, and my soil's extremely alkaline.
Right, right.
You know, we're talking pH of 7 to 8.
Uh-huh.
So really, really alkaline soil.
Right.
Yeah.
And our winter just would burn all the buds off.
Right, right.
So
we were seeing Philadelphus and Eleongus. Is that
how? Eleagnus.
Eleagnus.
Yeah, I love
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Those are coming, making a comeback.
I think is so underused. Actually, Philadelphus and viburnum.
Yeah.
Are so underused. A viburnum to me is a complete four-season plant.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
Oh,
people
true.
Don't realize you know, that. I mean,
the
right
berries,
now in New York,
the flowers,
they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
have beautiful
right.
fall color.
Right. The color, yeah.
The birds yeah. like and to eat the berries. I mean, it's a great birding kind yeah. of plant.
Well, and you know, again, spring leaf color, blossom. Berries, or actually they're droops.
Uh-huh.
Right, to be technical.
Yep, yep.
You know, and then you get fall color with a lot of them on the leaves, and then the droops hang on, and then the birds come on, and some of them have interesting bark.
Right.
Philadelphus are great. They're also native.
Exactly,
you
exactly.
know, here we have a native Philadelphus, Lewis. I want to say Lewisii, but that's not right either. But, it's a great native we have that grows on both sides.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, that is something I'm really bringing into the nursery this year because I want more people to be growing them. And they're not a shrub that really gets out of hand.
No, exactly. My father was laughing because I was just at home for Thanksgiving, and I was saying, Dad, we need to get some. They chopped down their laurels because they had just gotten diseased, and they were 40 years old, and we just decided we wanted something else. So we were trying to figure out what to put, and I said, what about Philadelphus? And he was like, don't you remember when we bought this house, we ripped out Philadelphus?
Well, it's come around again.
And I was like, it's back
again,
now.
Again.
Look, sweater plants. Dresses are back, so Eleagnus and Philadelphus can come back.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Now I can't grow all of the Eleagnus out here, but the one I do have at the nursery is Quicksilver,
uh-huh.
the one that was introduced in England that's smaller, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are very impressed because my specimen's maybe 10 feet tall and 8 years old, where in this area they were brought in as windrow trees, they're a noxious weed.
Yeah, right.
Basically.
Right.
Well, but I love the look, and I love the fragrance. I
yeah,
admit that.
That fragrance you can't beat. So, well, I'm sorry, Bruce, we have to wrap it up. Our time is up for today. But thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
And please visit the website.
Is it heavypetalnursery.com?
Nursery.com.
Great.
You'll be inspired, and what you're doing out there is fabulous. And hopefully we can get out there and meet you in person.
Well, at least come and see me speak.
Absolutely. And we'll actually post a link to your website via our Facebook fan page.
That sounds fabulous.
Thanks, Bruce.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
If you miss any part of the show, please note it's available via archives on the website, heritageradionetwork.com, and via podcast. You can leave comments or join our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc., We Dig Plants, or visit our website, groundworksgardens.com. Thanks for listening. See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.